Utah has become the first state in the country to ban the addition of fluoride to public drinking water, and other states, including Ohio and Kentucky, are considering their own fluoride legislation. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the bill he's backing is Ohio State Representative Levi Dean, a Republican from Xenia. Thanks so much for being here, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Lucy. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, we're grateful for your time. Explain the legislation that you've introduced regarding fluoride in Ohio's drinking water.
My bill's very, very simple. It just says that no utility that provides public water for drinking purposes, such as, you know, a city, a county, there's even a few private water companies here in Ohio, they shall not add fluoride to the water. And that's it. It's a one-page bill. It's about as simple as it gets.
Yeah. And why do you favor that approach?
I think it's about personal choice. So I know some people, they really want fluoride to be in their water, and other people really don't want it to be in their water. And I'm not weighing in on the debate of whether it's good or bad. I just think that each individual should be allowed to choose whether they're ingesting fluoride or not. And I don't think it's up to the government to decide.
Well, I'm sure you've heard the argument that fluoride in drinking water at the levels that are recommended in the United States, that it's safe, it's an inexpensive and effective way to reduce tooth decay. How do you respond to those arguments?
Well, some people have that belief, other people don't, which is why this bill gives each individual the right to choose. The opposite arguments of that are that the topical application of fluoride through things such as fluoridated toothpaste is a much more effective application. And I kind of personally believe that as well. I believe many dentists would probably agree with me too. So why we're doing something like this is a little bit odd to me. You know, I would much rather that we advocate for strong dental health and the best and most effective means, which in my opinion is more diet. It's brushing your teeth. It's getting the fluoride through toothpaste rather than through water.
You mentioned that some people, for you, it's a personal freedom choice. Some people really like having fluoride in their drinking water. Other people don't. If it is banned in Ohio's public water systems, how would people be able to get fluoride in their water if they want it?
Well, even currently, they can get treatments from dentists. They can go to the store and buy droplets. I'm also probably looking to add an amendment to the bill. There will be lots of water suppliers who have leftover amounts of fluoride if this bill passes. And rather than just throw it away, I would like to add an amendment to where individuals can go if they choose and pick up some of those droplets. And then that way, that fluoride is not going to waste and they can still choose to put it in their own drinking water if they would like.
But there are people who have trouble getting to the dentist. There might be a lack of access in rural communities. The argument for municipal drinking water has been it's not free, but everybody gets it. And it's a lot easier to get the fluoride maybe that way than going to a dentist if you're far away from one.
Yeah. And, like I said, the toothpaste is one thing. And then secondly, I'm very open to an amendment that would make available to the public the leftover fluoride that then they could pick up and add to their own water if they would like. That way it's being both fiscally responsible. We're not just wasting that or dumping it down the drain, but then also allowing people to have that personal freedom and choice. So I think that's a good balance. I will say a lot of rural people anyways don't have, if they're on a well, they don't have fluoride added to their water anyhow. So that part of it isn't really a concern. People on a well don't really have to deal with this issue one way or another.
You've probably seen some of the coverage about the ban that Utah passed, and critics of legislation like your bill, like these bans, say that legislation like this ignores science and the scientific evidence that fluoride is safe and effective. How would you respond to that?
Well, like I said before, you could Google fluoride effectiveness or fluoride safeness. And if you want to, you can find a study or a report that's going to prove your side right, whichever side of that issue you fall on. So in my opinion, rather than us saying, you have to have it in your water and you have to drink it and swallow it, Why don't we just say you have that option if you would like, and you have that option if you would not like, and let each individual decide for themselves.
One of the other arguments I've seen about this is fiscal in nature, that some people say, well, not adding it to drinking water could lead to greater Medicaid costs for treating cavities that more people would develop. Do you have any concerns from a fiscal point of view on that?
There's also the fiscal, it wouldn't be to the state, but to the local governments who have to add it. They would save some money there. So that's definitely a fiscal policy. I would say the fiscal part of it is kind of a separate issue, but I'm more than willing to work on, say, for instance, I'm fully in support of getting rid of sugary soda and pop and sugary drinks for SNAP benefits. I think when you look at the data for that, it's the number one thing bought in Ohio for SNAP benefits is sugary drinks and pop. I would say that is a far greater contributor to Medicaid costs than fluoride. So I'm certainly willing to have that conversation with people if they want to look at alternative means for the best fiscal process. But I think that's a separate issue in regards to this.
What are you hearing from constituents about this? Is this something you've talked with a lot of voters about?
Yeah, I mean, the idea actually came from local constituents. A city in my district, their local leaders contacted me, wanting me to put forward this bill. A lot of people think it came from the national level, but it was locally that I heard from people who said that they wanted this option. That's why I originally put forward the bill, anyways. First off, and then yeah, a lot of people have reached out, expressing support for different reasons. Whether it's personal freedom. Some of them have medical issues, and the fluoride really messes with them. I've gotten some really heartfelt emails and letters from people regarding that. You know, a few people have said they oppose it, and that's fine. Like, that's their right to oppose that. Most of the people who have opposed it have not been from my district, though. Almost. Most of my constituents that I've heard from have been in support of personal freedom.
Where does your legislation stand in the process right now?
So right now it's been assigned to a committee, and we haven't had our first hearing yet. We were kind of waiting for the whole budget process in the House to be finished. And obviously that finished yesterday. So we're going to go on a break, I guess, for 2 weeks and then come back. And then it will be set for its first hearing. And we'll go from there.
Yeah. Have you heard much support from Ohio House leadership on this?
I haven't been in contact with House leadership on this particular issue, one way or another. I know the speaker has said that I think a reporter asked him about it, and I don't think he had thought a whole lot about it until this bill had come up. So it's something that we're going to go through the process, and, we're going to figure out. So I do eventually want to talk to them about this issue, but right now with the budget, that was kind of the main focus in the beginning of the year. Now that that's past us, we can start moving on to some other things. So,
what do you think is kind of the ultimate goal for this? As I mentioned, Utah is the first state in the country that has banned the addition of fluoride to public drinking water. Do you think that, we could see a national ban someday? Would you think support is growing to ban the addition of fluoride to public drinking water across the country?
I really can't speak to it nationally. Enough stuff, like, I barely knew about Utah doing it. I stay very busy just in regards to my own personal life and in the state of Ohio. That keeps me busy enough. From the little bit that I have heard, I mean, it certainly seems to be an issue that's coming a lot more to the forefront. I hadn't heard a whole lot about it before, maybe the last 5 years, but I really don't know as far as what the national, at the federal level is going to happen. I don't think a whole lot of people know what's going to happen at the federal level. So,
well, I have been talking with Ohio State Representative Levi Dean, a Republican from Xenia. Thank you so much for your time today. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, thank you, Lucy. I appreciate it.
Up next, we'll get a dentist's perspective on fluoride. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We just heard from an Ohio lawmaker who wants to ban the addition of fluoride to public drinking water in the state. Now, let's talk with a dentist. Joining me is Ohio Dental Association President, Dr. Hal Jeter. Thanks so much for being here, Dr. Jeter.
Thank you, Lucy. Great to be here. Thanks for asking me to be a part.
As we mentioned earlier, Utah has become the first state in the country to ban the addition of fluoride to public drinking water. Other places, including Ohio, are considering similar bans, as we just heard from Representative Dean. What do you think about those bans?
Well, in a word, I think they're a bad plan. There is a preponderance of sound scientific evidence dating back over 7 decades that indicate that fluoride added in optimal levels, meaning the currently prescribed 0.7 milligrams per liter, has great benefit in reducing tooth decay. It has great safety margin, indicating that there is, you know, no evidence that that I know of, and there's no evidence that's been published, that would indicate that those levels are indicated in any untoward health effect. We fear that should fluoride be banned large scale, that we're going to see a reciprocal large scale increase in dental decay issues associated with that, which would, you know, include abscesses and things like that. So we're very concerned about the effects should these bans come into place.
We just heard from Representative Dean, who suggested, you know, you can Google whether fluoride is safe and get competing answers. We got an email about that from Andrew, who writes, why not just go ahead and have some more up-to-date testing done first? Because I'm sure there are many new methods of testing and data analysis that can give us a better idea whether the fluoride is good to use or not. Would you trust everything that you read on Google to make a decision like this? What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Jeter, this idea that, you know, if you dig around on the internet, you can find lots of sources, or at least a number of sources, that say, hey, you should be worried about fluoride?
Well, I think the internet and, you know, the search engines that were mentioned can tell you about anything you want to hear. The question is, how credible is the science? When we speak of scientific research and studies and things like that, the term peer-reviewed comes into play. What that means is, a study is done. How well does that stand up to scientific scrutiny? Do other like-minded scientists agree with those results? Is the data, relevant? Is it applicable? Is it something that is comparable to what question we're trying to answer? You mentioned, or Andrew mentioned rather in his email, a new study. Actually, one of the requests that the American Dental Association has put forth to Congress is that a study be commissioned through the National Institutes of Health to do just that. If we don't want to stand on the 70 plus years of research that already proved the safety and efficacy of fluoride added to community water systems, then let's do a new study. Let's see just what the data shows us. And it's so important to follow the data. We can have our theories, we can have our hypotheses and what we think is going to happen, but what does the data show? And so I think a study would be a great idea to do that.
So you're saying the peer-reviewed research that's out there that you trust and believe, that science says that fluoride is safe at the levels recommended?
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, we also just heard from Representative Dean. He made the case that, you know, people can get fluoride from other sources like toothpaste or mouthwashes, and that it's even more effective from those sources than it is in drinking water. How do you respond to that idea?
Well, I would start by saying that studies have been done on that. In other words, fluoride-containing toothpaste with or without the complement of fluoridated drinking water, there is a distinct difference, even though fluoride in the toothpaste obviously is effective because it's adding fluoride to the oral environment. Studies showed, I believe, about a 25% difference. In other words, a 25% less prevalence of dental decay if you also have fluoridated water in addition to using those fluoride toothpastes. And then you also have to factor in, you know, how compliant is the person who is brushing. Are they brushing correctly? Are they brushing for 2 minutes a day? Are they, you can't necessarily speak in ideals because people don't necessarily take ideal care of their mouths. And so what we do know is that if you compare people who use toothpaste with fluoride without fluoridated water to those who have fluoridated water, there is a noticeable difference in the incidence of dental decay.
So the science is saying, hey, you kind of need both.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Representative Dean also suggested that if his ban were to pass in Ohio, water districts could distribute unused fluoride to customers so they could add it to the water themselves if they want to. Would that be safe or advisable?
Neither. It would neither be safe nor advisable. You're giving the public the responsibility for calculating a dosage for something that they have no training in, mostly. You talk about toxicity and things like that. That would be one of our major concerns if those raw supplies of fluoride were released to the public. That's why it's so important that we maintain things the way they are. Fluoride is added in a very precise dose. Now, I know I mentioned a number earlier, 0.7 milligrams per liter. Let me put that in perspective for you. That is 3 drops in a 55-gallon drum of water. It's a very small amount, but even at that small amount, it's very effective. Studies that show that there is any type of health risk to adding fluoride to water were done in environments outside the United States, first of all. And then secondly, with fluoride levels at least twice as much or more than that 0.7 milligrams per liter. So it's not really an apple to an apple. And so again, the safety and efficacy of what we're adding to our community water systems in the United States has been shown to be safe and effective in doing what it's supposed to do, which is helping safeguard the oral health of citizens of this country.
I'm glad you brought up those studies done outside the US because critics of adding fluoride to drinking water point to those studies and they question the safety of fluoride for developing brains. And it sounds like you're saying, well, those studies, such as they are, looked at much higher levels of fluoride. Is that correct?
That is correct. They looked at least one, 2 times 0.7 is 1.5. And so those studies, one in particular from the National Toxicology, to, excuse me, National Toxicology Program, which is the one I was really referencing previously, using fluoride levels in their study of 1.5 or more milligrams per liter, again, twice as much as you would find in any water system in the U.S. And that study in particular has been called into question on about three levels. First of all, because of that difference in the fluoride concentration, is it relevant to what's happening in the U.S.? Well, no, because you're looking at something that's twice as much as what we would ever put in our water system. Secondly, the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine found that that report lacked transparency. It didn't provide sufficient evidence to support its conclusions. Thirdly, those results have been, and those findings have been misinterpreted. It just doesn't reflect the established safety of community water fluoridation.
This time is going so fast. We have Leslie on the line. Leslie, I'm going to read your comment to Dr. Jeter. Leslie says she'd love to hear when did science become something that some people consider a myth or just a belief. What are your thoughts on that? Do you feel that same way? Are you getting frustrated about that?
Well, as a scientist, and I think the entire scientific community would be confounded by, when did people stop looking at the facts and start listening to other things that aren't necessarily accurate? I like that question. I wish I had the answer as to when. I don't know when, but it is now. So, in other words, it just we need to think objectively. We need to follow the data. We need to make our conclusions based on what the preponderance of evidence is. And again, what I can tell you is that for over 70 years, not only the American Dental Association, not only the dental organizations, but the CDC and the national, different scientific communities have done studies on fluoride, its efficacy, and on fluoride in community drinking water supplies. And it's all come up to the same result. It's safe, it is effective, it's something that, and I haven't even gone here, but one of our main concerns is if this is prohibited in a large scale, the most vulnerable populations are our kids. and who many times and for different reasons have difficulty accessing the oral healthcare system. And so the thought is that if at least we can get them to drink water, if we can at least get them to drink water that's optimally fluoridated, it will give them at least a baseline level of protection in lieu of easily obtaining, the oral health aids like fluoridated toothpaste and other things, or seeing a dentist. At least they've got that level of protection.
Thank you for that call, Leslie. We appreciate it. You know, Congress is debating whether to ban purchasing sugary beverages with SNAP, you know, using the system that some people refer to as food stamps. That's something that Representative Deem brought up with us too. Would avoiding sugary beverages be enough to solve oral health problems?
I don't believe so. I don't think it would be enough. I think it's a good start, and I would advocate, that we certainly need to reduce the consumption of sugary beverages in our diets. That's definitely a culprit in a lot of what I see in my practice. We have so many, in my area, we call it, not to disparage any brand, but there's a certain brand of soda that we relate to that being that kind of mouth. And so it's very evident that is a culprit in the decay levels that we're seeing. Now, would that be enough? No, I don't believe so, because you again have to talk about, okay, how effectively are they performing their brushing, their flossing? Are they even using a fluoridated toothpaste? Again, the one thing that democratizes that levels the playing field is making sure that people get at least an optimal amount of fluoride in the water that they drink every day. And so, just to go a step further, you have to think, what makes sense here when you compare fluoride to reducing, the consumption of sugary beverages. One doesn't seem to compare to the other. On one hand, we're making a decision to try to enhance the public's health by reducing the amount of sugar that they ingest. The data supports that. On the other hand, we're making a decision to take away a safeguard that the data does not support taking away, that also would be enhancing the public's health. So.
What would some of the consequences be of an increase in tooth decay if fluoride were not part of our drinking water, were not added to these recommended levels? What would that mean for individuals and for communities if we saw a significant increase in tooth decay?
Well, let's talk about what tooth decay is. And one of the misconceptions is, oh, it's just a hole in the tooth and whatever. But that's not the case. Tooth decay has a bacterial component, and there is a bacterial infection that can be associated with it. Let's talk about that in the realm of children for a minute. When you talk about children's oral health and tooth decay and dental decay, that is the most prevalent disease of childhood. Cavities in kids. The most prevalent disease in childhood is more common than asthma. Because of untreated tooth decay, and incidentally, untreated dental disease was named Ohio's greatest healthcare need several years ago. Okay?
Well, we may have to
All
leave
right.
it there. I apologize, Dr. Jeter. We have run out of time. I've been talking with Ohio Dental Association President Dr. Hal Jeter. Thank you so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.